Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports, brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pedro, let me say congratulations on your long time in radio, you and your team, and for your ratings, man. I was reading about that. I'm very impressed with you, Pedro.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another, but I'm going to get the job done.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios located in the city by the bay, the world's most beautiful city, San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, no, make that 36 plus years now of being often imitated but never duplicated. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to hour number two live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 211, the Dan Patrick Channel, of course, SB Nation Sports, and 1,000 other internet platforms. Bottom line is, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. This hour, we'll delve into the world of, course, combat sports, basically MMA and boxing. When I say MMA, of course, we went deep into MMA an hour or more. I talked about the pimping factor and Dana White and this kind of stuff. So I will stay away from the pimping factor as far as Dana's concerned in hour number two, and probably shine our light on a young and upcoming prospect in the world of mixed martial arts by the name of Sean O'Malley. He's got a short interview with him. He was the winner last week, of course, USC 250. USC 250, the major payoffs, $350,000 to the winner. The winner of the main event, she got $350,000. If they sold $200,000 pay-per-views, that was like, you know what, $15 million. So she gets like $350,000. Does that make sense? Back to pimping. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking the world of boxing, MMA. Open phone lines around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Little Oakland stroke from the Tower of Power.
Now, let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You know, I'm just excited. To be back. I wish we could do a fight every night. You know me, Pedro.
Nick Charles, the late Nick Charles, passed away June 25th, 2011, of course, from bladder cancer. We'll talk with Nick in about 40 minutes past the hour. Nick Charles will join us from an interview from 2010, straight up. He was a pal in broadcasting, was a pal as far as a boxing pal. And, of course, I remember getting that last tweet. I think it was a tweet or an email like 3 days before he died. Hey, you know, it was a pretty good fight tonight. In other words, he was a boxing fan all the way up to like 3 days before his passing. Of course, we'll talk about that in depth in our segment four of today's Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Now, getting a lot of heat, people say that I'm hard on Joe Frazier. I'm not giving Joe Frazier a fair chance. In other words, I'm harder on Joe Frazier today than Ali was in the 70s and this and that. You know, I'm not really that hard on Joe Frazier. I mean, we had our ups and our downs, and I didn't like the fact that, well, I don't like drunks, but I don't like the fact, my father was a drunk, and to an extent, both my parents drank, and I had 5 out of 6 uncles were alcoholics. So what I'm trying to tell you is, booze is just not my thing, you know? And how can I put this? I want to do this nice. Let's do this a little class. Open phone lines around the planet, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. No, you know, when when Joe came into the ring, when he worked with Von Bean, he was under the influence and he was drunk, and there was just no doubt about that. I mean, some of the stuff that they called the referee that night, they called him a honky. I mean, they're yelling honky, and HBO's televising the fight. I'm doing the international TV for Don King Productions, and going around the world. Larry and his crew are doing the domestic feed, I believe. Of course, that was the Von Bean Evander Holyfield fight at the big Atlanta stadium. I can't remember the name of it right now. But at the end of the day, you know, you look back at boxing and you say to yourself, Joe Frazier was a hell of a fighter. 1964 Olympic gold medalist. I mean, with the exception of Muhammad Ali, he beat everybody. Of course, George Foreman come along, the 1968 Olympic gold medalist, and would destroy him. But they were different guys. It was sort of like one guy beating up on a little guy. I mean, Joe Frazier was so small compared to George Foreman in stature and size that when you saw that beat down the first time, you know that Joe had absolutely no chance in the second fight. Anyway, bottom line is, here's Joe expanding. Take it back. We're going to go with Joe, Ron Lyle, George Foreman, a bunch of guys talking about Joe and Ali.
I've raised 10 kids, and there's always one child who can take a joke and another who can't. Muhammad could say something and just tick Frazier off, and Muhammad would be smiling about it.
It was like voices coming in his head. And I couldn't tell you who he's coming from, because I don't know. But therefore, if you ain't got something right to say to me, then you better keep me quiet. Because I'm going to peel off and hit you. Because it's just nothing for me to do but just walk straight, walk right.
Look at you, you're losing. You lost 3 rounds already. Come on, Leon, hit you 4 times. This worries a man.
Muhammad said, never feel sorry for me. He said, I'm great. But, you know, maybe he may not feel bad, but the guy that fought him do, because you see what he's going through.
He put it on the line, brother. The representation that he gave to the black community will never be forgotten, no matter what.
I am the greatest.
It's just sad because, you know, it's sad because, you know, he's a great guy and hoping that maybe he could, like, live the kind of life that we live, you know. I'd love to see him do that. And then because he earned that.
Joe Frazier in tears there on a couple of occasions. Of course, he was sad there at the end. Of course, Joe was, as I said, Joe was two different guys. There was Joe, the drunk, and then there was Joe, the non-drunk. And it was like as distinctly different as Jekyll and Hyde. They were just two absolutely different people. He was the most giving, lovable soul when he wasn't drinking. When he was drinking, he wasn't a good guy. Just was a jerk. I'll put it to you like that. But some of the people on that tape here, there, George Foreman, of course, Rudy Clay, aka Rahman Ali, Muhammad Ali's brother, of course, was a professional fighter who couldn't lick a stamp if you wet his tongue. And of course, there were some other great names on there, but, you know, Ron Lyle was a name that stands out for me there. And the reason why is that Ron and I became tight. He was working at Johnny Taco's gym after his retirement. This was in the 1980s in Las Vegas, Nevada. Ron Lyle, of course, a heavyweight contender, a guy that went to jail for murder, got out of jail, became a heavyweight contender of note. Of course, had that controversial ending with Muhammad Ali when the referee maybe jumped in a little bit too early or maybe didn't jump in too early. I'm not going to get into that controversy, but, you know, Ron Lyle was a guy that went through the hard times. I think he went to prison in Colorado. And, of course, that was where he was from, I believe, Denver, Colorado. And when he came to Las Vegas, he was a trainer. He was training guys at Johnny Taco's gym. And what it was this was Johnny Taco reaching out to an ex-fighter and helping him by saying, you know, I can't give you any money, but I can give you a place at the gym to train fighters, and you don't have to pay me. Not until you may start making some money. Well, Ron Lyle never really made any money training fighters in Vegas, so Johnny Tacos sort of gave him a free ride for a long time, okay? But he was training fighters there, and he was always there to back Johnny up, because Johnny was getting up there in age. Of course, Johnny Taco, I believe, died in, what, 1997, age 84. Anyway, but Ron Lyle, the former heavyweight contender, may he rest in peace as well, he helped Johnny out, and he was always there, and he was fun to be around, because I'd be jumping rope, and I was talking smack. I used to talk a lot of smack in the gym. I don't care where I was. I loved to talk smack in the gym. Even when I was around guys who were better than me, it just, I don't know, I just talked a lot of smack. Anyway, so I'm jumping rope, talking smack, doing doubles and triples. I mean, really showing off and that kind of good stuff. And Ron Lyle says to me, he calls me Copper. That's what he used to call me, Copper. So did Duran. Duran used to call me Cop. But Ron Lyle called me Copper because he knew I was a cop. And he was obviously a former ex-con, having went to jail for prison. I went to jail for murder. So we're jumping rope one day, and I said, you know, Ron, you know, if you ever told me you were going to kill me, I believe you. And he said to me, you better, Pedro. I'm just kidding. Anyway, bottom line is, a lot of weird stuff happened at that gym. This was Johnny Taco's Main Street gym in Las Vegas. And that, of course, that's where all the heavyweights trained, as far as, and I don't mean heavyweights, just like heavyweight fighters. I mean heavyweights, per se. When they came to town for a big fight, if they weren't from Vegas, for the most part, they trained at Johnny Taco's. Marvin Hagler, Muhammad Ali, Larry Holmes. I can go on. Mike Tyson, to an extent, I can go on and on. I mean, a lot of guys train there. I mean, I remember the one time we're training at the gym there, and I'm watching a good fight on television, and then somebody says to me, you know, did you hear about what happened last week? And I said, yeah, I read it in the paper, man. I said, Bruce Curry went crazy here with a gun. Yeah, Bruce Curry went crazy at Johnny Taco's gym and shot a few rounds into the door. But thank God Johnny had one of these iron doors. I mean, like a door like, you know, God couldn't penetrate if he didn't want to. I mean, it was like a death to, I mean, the door could not be penetrated. But Bruce Curry, the former WBC junior welterweight champion, the brother of Donald Curry, the former WBA welterweight champion, of course, out of Texas. Anyway, he's shooting off his gun out there. He's trying to shoot at Jesse Reed, his trainer, and he's behind this iron door. It ain't happening. But that happened there at that gym. So many crazy things happened at that gym there in Las Vegas. And then I was reading a book put together by a so-called Sonny Liston expert a fortnight ago, just reading a part of it, and he detailed Sonny, the Main Street gym is a two-story gym. It was a one-story gym, and it was flat. And from that point forward, I just put the book down. I mean, you know, here I am. He's talking about this two-story gym. Well, guess what? It was a one-story gym. It was flat. I mean, just a flat one-story gym. So if you get important things like that in the book make me say to myself, you know, I'm not going to read the rest of it, and I put it down. And no, I'm not going to bring it up, but if you're a Sonny Liston fan, you know the books I'm talking about, because there's a lot of Liston conspiracy books coming out of late. Rudy Clay. People say to me, Rudy Clay, Rahman Ali, could he fight? As I said, he couldn't fight at all. I mean, he tried to fight. He was on the show about 2-3 years ago. He was on the show a couple years ago. We're talking, of course, his brother and the fact that the Parkinson's syndrome, you sort of could hear it there in that one little clip with him there, that the Parkinson's syndrome was setting in with him too. So I don't know if this was hereditary or not, but both these guys, both brothers, got Parkinson's. I'm talking about Rahman Ali, Muhammad Ali's brother, and Ali. Of course, Ali got Parkinson's syndrome. They tried to differentiate that from Parkinson's disease. I don't know what it meant, but, you know, when Ali wasn't taking his medication, his hand shook violently almost sometimes. And then when he took the medication, you know, he was against taking it. He didn't like taking the meds when we went out. And I said to him, why? He goes, because they don't make me feel good. I don't feel like me. When I take those medications, excuse me, and he didn't look like me when he took those medications, sort of like stupefied him, and of course that's why he didn't want to take it. So a lot of times when we went places, he would allow his hands to shake, he would try to put his hands in his pockets, he would try to hold his hands down below his waist and this and that where people couldn't see him and hold them together, because he was embarrassed. He was embarrassed to an extent. Yeah, the Parkinson's syndrome, I think that sort of humiliated, brought back a lot of humbleness of Muhammad Ali that people didn't think he had, because here was the one opponent that in Father Time he just couldn't beat, Parkinson's or Father Time. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline. Little Tower of Power to the break. Check it out. We hung out at Jim's Donuts and at 29th and Mission in South in San Francisco here in the city, an old donut shop. This was the number one played song on the jukebox, and we wore it out.
The way that you walk, the way that you talk, really knocks me out, girl. The clothes that you wear, the style of your hair, the way that you fare, under all conditions, your mind, all of the time. So wonderful, so marvelous, girl, you're everything to me, and you're super.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
If you give me enough money, I'll fight my own mother.
Now, I wouldn't go that far, because my mother could kick ass. I kid you not. One time she caught me cutting school. She finds out I'm hanging out at a construction site in the Potrero District, so anyway, of San Francisco. She works out there on Geary Boulevard at the old Sears store. So she takes a cab from Sears on Geary to this construction site, the Army Street Circle. And, you know, we're playing on these tractors. We're cutting school. We're having a good time. I'm thinking nothing. Big deal, right? So all of a sudden I hear, Pete! And, you know, this sounds like my mom. Yeah, it sounds like my mom. And one more time, Pete! Yeah, it was mom. So I got down off this tractor we were playing on. Don't ask me why we're playing. We were kids. Anyway, so I got her, walked over to her, and she didn't say a word, but she hit me so hard in the ear, she hooked me. She slap hooked me, but she hit me so hard. She didn't knock me down, knock me around, but my ears rang for 3 or 4 days. So I accused her later in life, of child abuse. I kid you not, Mom, you abused me. She said, you know what? I kept you in line, and she did. May she rest in peace. God bless my mother. Anyway, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Nobody really knows what drives a fighter. In fact, you know, guys are colorful, like Jorge Mauro Páez back in the day, his boxing era of the 80s and the 90s. He was such a colorful guy. Of course, a circus clown who turned into be a professional boxer, an acrobat who became an IBF featherweight champion, of course, out of Mexicali, Mexico. I had those fights with Calvin Grove down there. Memorable fights, no doubt about that. I was down there in Mexicali one time, and all I can say was it was true that they did name he's gone now. I might as well say it. Anyway, they did name a room in a hotel, which was a brothel in Mexicali, California, Mexicali, Mexico, right across the border from the U.S. Anyway, it was called, the Hotel Bahia, and they had the Marty Denken suite. And I just have to say it, Marty Denken was a trick. Marty Denken was he passed away a couple of years ago. He's a good guy, the sheriff. I mean, he has his ups and downs. People like him, people don't like him. But the bottom line was, he did have his own suite there. I'm talking about the Hotel Bahia, the Marty Denken suite, which is a brothel in Mexicali. Anyway, Jorge Mauro Páez was a colorful dude, bleached, colored his hair different colors, you know, eventually did the tattoos and that kind of good stuff. The Mauro Páez, maybe of MMA right now, happens to be a guy named Sean O'Malley. I kid you not. 25 years old, comes to us from Montana. I mean, he's got tattoos on his face, tattoos on his body. He looks like a human Christmas tree without the lights. I kid you not. But, fighting out of Glendale, Arizona. Of course, the MMA lab. He's a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's been fighting since 2013. And since 2013, he's 12-0. 8 knockouts, 1 submission, 3 decisions. I mean, I think, good Lord, I think this guy really could be somebody at 135. And of course, 135, 145 pounds, sort of like the hotbed, 145 to 125. Of course, I like the flyweight division. The fact that Henry Cejudo might be retiring, we'll talk about that after this clip. But the bottom line is, this young man, I'm telling you, he can fight.
I'm getting deja vu from March, because I remember you saying that you just weren't that amped up, you know, after a great performance in front of a big crowd in Vegas, and now you get a walk-off knockout, and you're just so calm. Why do you celebrate later, or are we seeing sort of the celebration right here?
I expected that. You know, I think I don't want to talk for everyone, but I think some people get really excited because they're kind of surprised if they knock someone out. I plan on knocking people out. I think for the last 3 weeks, I knew I was fighting Eddie Wineland on June 6th. So in my mind, I'm knocking Eddie Wineland out June 6th. Now I just did it. It doesn't feel, I don't know. I just feel very calm. You know, Justin Gaethje was talking about it too on the Rogan podcast. You know, you get those ups and those downs. I try to stay pretty calm, pretty level. I'm not going to have a big come down after this. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to stay pretty level. And like I said, I expected to knock him out in the first round.
Did you miss the crowd reaction when you dropped him?
The crowd makes every, you know, it definitely amps everything up. If I could have picked to fight tonight with the crowd, I would have done it 100%. I love the fans. Like, it's a huge reason, like, I continue to want to get better and want to perform is the fans that are diehard fans that love this sport and they just want to watch fights. So I want to go out there and perform for those guys. They're all at home celebrating right now, which is awesome. But, you know, if I could hear them celebrating, it would have been cool.
UFC rocking and rolling, of course, with heavyweights, Curtis Blaydes. Curtis can fight. I've never been one on Curtis's conditioning. I think maybe he lacks a little bit in the gas tank. But then again, who am I? And I know heavyweight taking the shots from Curtis Blaydes was Curtis can rock. Of course, he will be in the main event on the 20th of June, of course, live coming to you from the UFC Apex Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. Of course, June 20th being the anniversary, the 40th anniversary of the greatest fight I've ever seen in my life. I'm talking about Roberto Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard, 15 rounds, Montreal, Canada. I watched it at the Cow Palace in Daly City, California. It was one of the greatest events of my life. I seriously, as a boxing journalist, as a boxer, as a boxing fan, that night did it all. Anyway, the 20th of June, coming to you on ESPN. Of course, it'll be Curtis Blaydes in the main event taking on Alexander Volkov. Volkov can fight. Both these guys are big, so anything can go. I wouldn't expect this one to go five rounds. It's scheduled for five-minute rounds. Josh Emmett and Shane Burgess in the co-feature. Do I want to get excited about that? No. But let me tell you, the UFC is hurting so bad that they've got Cowboy Jim Miller coming back at 160 pounds. The guy's like, got to be like 95 years old going on 115, taking on Roosevelt Roberts in a catchweight fight at 160 pounds. So the UFC, can I say, I'm looking at the calendar. Ain't a whole lot there. There's not a whole lot there. Of course, Stipe Miocic and Cormier will hook it up for that third time. I'm not a big fan. I'm just not a fan of Cormier and Miocic. I mean, they didn't do it to me. They didn't do it for me the first two times. I mean, they were dull fights. And Cormier, that second fight, essentially, he detached Miocic's retina by poking at him with his fingers. And the referee wasn't calling him on that. And I kept saying, I'm screaming to the TV, said, call him on that. Because I can see. I know what's happening when you got to put fingers in guys' eyes. That's how retinas get attached. But UFC 252, when I say August 15th, the main event, Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier, the former champion. Of course, Cormier, unbeaten, a light heavyweight with the exception of John Jones. No knocking that, sort of like losing the guy. Because, of course, at 205 pounds, John Jones has never been beaten outside of that one time he was disqualified when I think he needs somebody on the ground. Speaking of John Jones, he may have retired. This week he's indicated he's retired. Khabib is retired. Jorge Masvidal is upset, of course, with the paydays and the breakdowns. And I've been saying it for a long time. And, of course, I said it in hour number one. Fighters got to get paid. Athletes got to get paid. If the NFL realizes that 47 or whatever that percentage of the gate of the entire revenue goes to the players, then you know, then I think that the UFC's got to basically do the same thing. I mean, because they're pimping these guys off, and I told you it's death match after death match. There's nothing easy. The fact, you know, the fact that Sean O'Malley had an easy fight with Mr. Wendland. Big deal. One easy fight one night. It's because he was superior physically. But for the most part, the UFC is not booking easy fights for guys. It's death match after death match because, as I said to you before, if they can't build you into a pay-per-view superstar, if they can keep you going, like on a B level, get you a title shot and you're all worn out by the time you get the title shot, then you make a defense or two and before you know it, guess what? It's time to stick a fork in you because you're done. Okay? You haven't made any money. But then it just goes on to the next guy. That's what's bad about the UFC. Quote Socrates Palmer, boxing is truly only PhD. He says, in the UFC, it's not the fighter. It's not, in other words, if Muhammad Ali was in the UFC, Dana White would try to make the UFC bigger than Muhammad Ali. That's just the way it is. Brand first. I don't know where he learned that. He's a fan of Donald Trump. Figure it out. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA, 35, make that 36 plus years now, often imitated but never duplicated. In our next segment of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, after the break, we will bring in, we'll spend some time with Nick Charles. It's emotional when I go back in time and listen to some of these old interviews with guys that have passed on, especially Nick. Nick passed a little early, of course, had bladder cancer, and of course, Genaro Hernandez passes as well in the month of June. I'll have him on next week's show, or my last appearance, or his last appearance with us on this show, of course, but I'm not trying to delve into the negative or anything like that. But the bottom line is, I want to recognize guys when they were at their peak. And guess what? Nick Charles was rocking and rolling here. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Little Tower of Power saying, guess what? There ain't nothing stopping us, now. No, not if you listen to Ring Talk. He is a comeback fighter of 2009, folks. I kid you not. I'm talking about Showtime's Nick Charles. Nick, wonderful to have you in the house this evening, man. Very good evening to you. How are you and the family?
Pedro, we're doing well. I couldn't be better. I when we talk about comebacks and this and that, and people were just, in fact, I was just looking at messages from friends and people in boxing, actually, and I said, you know, what alternative did I really have? It was, my choice was either to check out or fight this thing. And so far, somebody else called me and in boxing earlier and said, you know, it's sort of like a 12-round fight. Hey, man, you were really knocked down early and lost some 10-8 rounds with this kind of thing, with this kind of cancer. But it's like a guy who's coming back is like Juan Manuel Marquez against Pacquiao, that type of thing.
Okay. I you know, you are on the Wall of Fame at ringtalk.com, and you are there because of the contributions you made not only to the broadcasting biz, of course, one of the original, I can say this affectionately, one of the original talking heads of CNN. How's that sound?
Well, you know what? I always used to look at some of those anchors. They said they have anchor butt, and like even and from, you know, the thin veneer from so-and-so to so-and-so, but behind that, like, face or something, there was, you know, the porch light was on, but nobody was home, that type of thing. I mean, I've seen enough anchors who were talking heads who say, hello, my name is blank, because they didn't fill in the blanks on the teleprompter. The one thing we always prided ourselves on in sports, and every sports person who does highlights, etc., who's an anchor, you know, you got to think on your feet, and you write your own copy, for better or worse. So it's more than a lot of news anchors do, you know, and at least in UK and in Europe, they call them news readers. I never thought I was that. I always thought, hey, man, for better or worse, I got to use my own language. And either it's helped me or hurt me all these years, but I'm still standing.
Good enough. Your first card back now in several months, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Chris Avalos and Jose Nuevas. That was your main event, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, and it was, I thought it would be a bigger challenge for Avalos. He was he's the kind of guy, he's got a lot of confidence, bordering on cocky. You know, he seems to be in a rush at 21, or 20 actually, just turned 20, 15 fights now. And I thought that Nieves, with such a solid technical foundation, Pedro would give him fits for a while anyway, at least to survive and stretch him out. First scheduled 10-rounder, first main event on national television. But Avalos is all about aggression, and sometimes his best defense is his offense. But he really took it to this Puerto Rican, and I was very impressed. So, you know, we're talking maybe this guy, next thing, maybe a top 15 fighter. I wouldn't rush somebody at 20, but he seems to be really on the right kind of flight path to being somebody special.
Do you know why cocky kids and kids from the hood have to be pushed? I mean, sort of have to take an accelerated path to stardom? Because longevity is not
in the card sometimes because of their lifestyle, because of where they're from, the whole nine yards. It's just not happening. You hear what I'm saying? So like Fernando Vargas, they rushed him into that fight with Trinidad because, you know, he was having problems outside of the ring. So
that's a good point, Pedro. You know, I fully understand that growing up in Chicago in a poor neighborhood. And I understand about boxers always that you want to be somebody so bad. But then, you know, it could go bad. We were talking about Francisco Bojado the other day.
Yeah.
And we saw him on Showbox our first year. And I said, man, this guy could be extraordinary. And then the second or third time he was on the show, his entourage was bigger than Tyson's. And I said, you know, this is something wrong for a guy who's so far away from being a champion. So it's a matter of keeping your head on straight, and that's really difficult because boxing, you know, historically you spring from nothing. You spring from nothing, and all of a sudden you're somebody, and you just have to keep it in check and keep it in perspective, and it's really asking a lot, as you said, from a young guy. But one thing about Avalos, and back to him, not that the show's about him, he's very well-grounded and focused. He's got two parents with him all the time. They're in his corner. His mother is really the stone-cold boss of the family. His father trains him. And it's the kind of foundation that really, really helps. And it's good to see. When we go to the fighters' meetings, his mom's there, his father's there, and you don't often see that with fighters and with a lot of athletes, you know.
You're tuned to Extra Sports 860, home of the Stanford Cardinal, and, of course, the Oakland Athletics of the American League. Of course, we've got baseball season just coming up in a couple of months, folks. So don't forget the Oakland A's are here, 860 on the AM dial. Extra Sports 860, the new sports authority here in Northern California. On the line from his lair on the East Coast, of course, is Showtime's very own Nick Charles making his big comeback this past Friday night on Showbox, going to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now, you know, this is your first fight card in how long? 7 months?
I did the Pacquiao, for Showtime it's 6 months, yeah. Pedro, I did the Pacquiao-Cotto fight, the international feed. Bob Arum was great. Bob Arum says, hey, I don't care what you look like, we know you could do the job, you know, because I look like I went 15 with Foreman and then 15 with Frazier in their primes, you know, from all this chemo and stuff. And it was really a struggle getting, at least up until the day, I was hurting. I got to be honest with you, but I said, I got to suck this up because I made a commitment, but I was just laying in bed in Vegas and bingo, I woke up that morning. I said, wow, I feel like $1 million. I could run through a wall. So, you know, that adrenaline got me through that card. But now that I've been off the chemo for almost 2 months, it's just a big difference in the whole bit, the energy and such. But yeah, to be back, I was just talking to my boss at Showtime, Gordon Hall, and a lot of well-wishers, and it didn't seem like I missed a beat. I never felt like I was away, but I really never believed. I always held out a lot of hope that Showbox would be part of my future, and sure enough, it has been. So hey, life is really good. I can't complain, Pedro, and not only that, I'm very, very grateful about life. I think I always have been. That's helped my attitude. You know, it's just no matter how many knocks you take in life, and sometimes you look at things and you say, I never said why me with stuff. I just have always tried to expect the best in people. I'm not some naive dude, believe me. Okay.
Nick Charles, our guest, having come back from cancer, folks, the 2009 Comeback Fighter of the Year. Got to switch subjects a little bit. We'll stay with the medical issue, health insurance. Are you paying 20% of your medical bills? Are you paying all your medical bills? Do you have health insurance? How did it go down?
Well, no, thank God. I got to tell you, you got to be covered in this country. You know, my wife works for CNN, and we have policies through her, of course, because I'm a gun for hire in boxing. You know, you don't get, believe me, I'm not crying, but it's a different thing. But I don't know if this is even something you brought it up, so I'll tell you little things like when you go for chemo and they really give it to you because they got to give you the strong stuff and they knock the hell out of you. Well, when your red blood count goes down to nothing, you're on the floor and you're that's the gas in your tank, but your white blood count goes to pot too, so you're susceptible to any kind of infection. So when you leave the hospital at the end of your chemo, each time they give you a shot. Well, the shot costs $6,000. It's six large for a shot. So think about that. If you don't have great insurance, I've talked to nurses, I've talked to doctors. I said, can everybody get this shot? I got really good insurance. And some people have said, oh, they'll give it to, and everybody gets it. Some people say, no, people don't take it. And it's really a shame in our country, you know, that some people can't afford and they got to pass on something that obviously could threaten their life to do without.
The only modern country in the world without some type of health plan for the poor and downtrodden in this country. Okay, shifting gears from that. So you've come back now. What's the weight like? Have you put on the weight? Put the weight back on?
I never lost it, man. I was in the gym 4 or 5 times a week, all the time. I said, you know, you're looking at the dumbbells. You're doing this. Your energy's down. Maybe you're not working as fast, but I said, I'm just going to work just as hard. And really, with the strength, you know how you could at least measure yourself in the gym, and you say, you know, I'm lifting the same amount of weights, doing the same amount of reps, and doing the same amount, same type of workouts I did before I knew I had cancer. So I thought that was really psychologically and physically important for me, and it really helped me, I think, because, you know, when I was doing chemo, these 4-day knockout sessions, you know, you're doing wall push-ups and dips, and the first couple of days the nurses are laughing at me and the doctors, and then I remember the fourth day I was doing them, my last day, the nurses are doing them with me, you know, and they said, you know, you're doing the right thing, because a lot of people come in, and everybody has different cancers, Pedro, everybody. When people call me, oh, Lance Armstrong beat it, he had a different kind of thing. It was a different deal. You know, my uncle had this. But the point is, they said, there's a lot of cancers here, but the people who do crappy are the ones who go in bed, lay there for four days, get the chemo, and they do lousy because they got a bad attitude, and they go home, and it just doesn't seem to help them, you know. So I think that's the one thing you could control is a good attitude and taking care of yourself, because, damn, I took care of myself before this, you know, and it still happened to me. It was a random thing, so I'm not gonna spit the bit out, like they say at the racetrack.
You know, when I've had a lot of death in the family in the past 15 years, mother, father, stepfather, this and that.
Oh, boy.
Stepfather, when he had cancer and the chemo, this and that, I used to pick him up. We take him over. We used to give him brownies and pot and that kind of good stuff, and that really relieved him. I mean, that really brought him back down to earth, and he told me that because of that, he was able to eat, and he was able to sort of keep his mind off his woes. Was medicinal marijuana part of recovery?
No, somebody asked me that the other day. I never even considered it. I mean, the side effects are horrible with the chemo, with this heavy, because they gave me the hardest chemo there is. They said, either that or you're going to be, I don't want to sound melodramatic, but I said, what if I don't take this chemo? They said, well, you got 4 to 6 months to live. That's it. You know, so I said,
yikes.
Well, the choice is right there. I'm taking it. But they said, we're going to hit you with the biggest bat we got. It's the only way to stop this. So, you know, and you're going to get side effects, and I don't even want to get into them. They're really, really bad on your body. So I understand where your stepfather was coming from, but I just said, you know, I'm toughing this through. I don't know if I'm eating cardboard here or, you know, or a juicy steak, but I'm going to get through it, and whatever it is, you know. And there were days, yeah, it was no fun, but like I said, what's the alternative, Pedro? You know, I believe in eternity. I'm good with that. I'm good with God. I'm not, like, frightened about it. Nobody wants to die, but so I had a lot of peace, but I want to be around. I got a little daughter I love so much, my wife, you know, it's so much more. I want to learn. I want to see more fights. You know, I look at these young kids come up, Chris Avalos, hey, I want to be around to see him go for the title or not. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of motivation for me. At the same time, I'm very much at peace, but I always felt, well, you know, thank God I didn't get too nauseated. I've heard the horror stories. At least I was able to eat, and I kept eating, and, you know, so I kept my weight up. It's great.
Okay. Victor Conti was on the show a few weeks ago. He of Tower of Power fame back in the 70s, and of course,
yeah.
The man that ran Balco, the mad scientist, from rock musician to mad scientist. I've never understood that, but he sort of tried to explain that in a 1-hour show. In fact, he just told me he might be here for the entire show next week here on Extra Sports 860 at 6:05 p.m. next Sunday night when Pedro Fernandez takes over the radio airways here on the new Sports Authority of Northern California. So Victor Conti says that EPO is something that increases the amount of oxygen in an athlete's blood from 25% to 30%. And he said that guys can take this, and that he said, you know, he said that Shane Mosley admitted taking it under oath and things like that. But guys can take this, and what it does is it increases their endurance dramatically. I mean, imagine having 30% more in the tank than in the 10th round than your foe, and you guys are of equal stature. So what I'm trying to say is, what about this thing with Floyd Mayweather? Was there merit to what he was saying, in which he wanted Pacquiao tested, now that Mosley's going to agree to that same type of testing?
Well, you know, I mean, sure, Mosley will. Mosley was guilty the one time, as you say, but I don't want to get... I think the important thing here is, at the racetrack, a jockey, they have to have an assurance of innocence because you're betting on game. I mean, that was always the premise of horse racing. If it wasn't gambling, nobody would go to the racetrack. But boxing supposedly is a little different. The unfortunate thing is there's no regulation. You know as well as I, Pedro, you do a fight in St. Louis or something, Missouri at a little at a Hilton hotel, which guys have done. They don't do the proper medicals, really, and such. They don't pay for all the stuff. Now, I think a blood test would be great for every fighter, but I think it would be fabulous. How much would it cost? Now, you're talking about undercards. A promoter does a little card in Oklahoma off TV. Is he going to be inclined to do a boxing card if he's got to pay $200 for every box, every fighter's blood test, for example?
No, Nick, and I'm with you on that one. I'm talking about the mega fights where there's millions of dollars on the line.
But how do you draw the line? But you say, okay, once a fight is over $1 million, you have to do it. Once a fight, you know, I'm all for it. I think it would be fabulous. I want the assurance of innocence. You know, when I say a guy's packed on weight, you know, I was at CNN doing the good feel good story, chasing Sosa and McGuire all over the country. Wow, this is great. This is just what baseball needed back then. And then, you know, yeah, there's that suspicion, and people are turning a blind eye and saying, no, it's too good for the game. And Manny Pacquiao's too good for the game right now. You know, he really is. He's absolutely crossed over a little bit, and he's got people who aren't big boxing addicts interested in the game. But that said, if he has nothing to hide is the one argument, then do it. But Mayweather, is he trying to get into his head? Is it legitimate? Do you not want to fight him? Mayweather couldn't have known, no, Pacquiao won't do this. It's just an excuse to get out of the fight because I'm afraid of the guy. There's too much money on the table. Yeah, you know, I think Floyd's really after preserving that carefully constructed perfect record. I mean, that said, I already picked him to beat Pacquiao in that fight, and I could tell you my reason someday. But I would love to see it across the board because it's not going to hurt anything, and I'd hate to see yet another scandal for this sport. We don't need it. You can be in love or be out of love.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Coming back with some soul, baby. The soul side of town, of course, Tower of Power 2020. Check them out at towerofpower.com. That's one of the title tune of their latest LP. Boxing going to happen the 16th, of course, in June from the MGM Grand. Of course, they call this the bubble. Joshua Greer is in the main event, taking on Mike Plania. Both these guys got pretty good records, 22-1. Versus 22-23-1, so some of these ones got to go unless it's a draw. Anyway, four or five fights on the card. Outside that, no big names there. As far as I'm going to take that back. Giovanni Santillan, 25-0, taking on former champion Antonio DeMarco, was 33-6. On the 18th of June, of course, both these are going to be on ESPN, ESPN Plus, I believe. Jose Pedraza in the main event against Mikel Lapierre. Lapierre is 22-1-1. Pedraza is 29-3, 26-3. Pretty good card there. So boxing, although they are, how can I put this, showcase fights on ESPN, they are fights. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Want to mention my good friend there. And he was a good friend of mine. He really was. I miss him. And, you know, we used to talk on the phone. And sometimes he'd give me these calls once in a while late at night. It's Nick Charles. You know, I didn't know what was going on, where he was at, that kind of good stuff. But I take these phone calls late at night. And we talk boxing. And, of course, much like Emmanuel Stewart. So I miss them both, him and the Kronk Jim Goldfather. I don't want to get emotional here. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Saturdays and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, and every show can be caught on podcast at anchor.com. The Ring Talk podcast at anchor.com. You're tuned to Ring Talk. Thank you.